Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staber. We're talking about art and politics, two forces that shape our world, and two forces that can absolutely collide to spark change. We're diving into the role of political art in American society this hour, speaking with three different artists, including a nationally renowned street artist, a political cartoonist who uses satire to dissect Ohio's news, and a local artist from here in Columbus who is part of a statewide Get Out the Vote effort. These artists show us how political art can spark conversations, ignite activism, and influence the world in which we live. We begin with Kevin Necessary, a Cincinnati-based cartoonist who uses humor and satire to provoke thought, critique power, and influence public opinion. Welcome to All Sides, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
So I have been following your political cartoons for years, but how did you get into political cartoon drawing?
It's something that I've been interested in ever since I was a kid. I was lucky enough to grow up in Cincinnati, and we had an amazing editorial cartoonist here in the form of Jim Borgman. And it was just something that I saw on a daily basis. And that's how I got into editorial cartooning.
Was there a cartoon that first drew you in, or a really memorable one?
Oh, gosh. You know, you're asking me to really plumb the depths of my memory here. I don't know if there was a specific cartoon that I remember, but I remember, just being able to open up the newspaper on a daily basis and see art that was connected to stories. And even before I knew what the art was connected to, I was just drawn to the style of art. It just really spoke to me.
Yeah. We've had political cartoons in this country pretty much since we've been a country. You know, we think of early examples like Benjamin Franklin's Join or Die, all the way back in 1754, all the way up to artists like Thomas Nast, who really, critiqued issues like corruption, slavery, was involved, in criticizing, Andrew Johnson and the fight against Tammany Hall. So, we have had political cartoonists for as long as we've had newspapers, essentially.
Yes. Actually, I was making a joke a few weeks ago about Benjamin Franklin being a cartoonist, and, he wasn't really known for anything else.
So we can
claim him. But yes, political cartooning has been an important part of the American dialogue, as you said, ever since the 1750s with that cartoon that Franklin did. Nast, obviously very important. He and I share a birthday.
Oh, that's
and,
cool.
Yeah. That kind of political discourse has been something that has been part of our national fabric, and even up through the 20th century, you have cartoonists such as Herblock, who was instrumental in shining a light on the Watergate controversy. It's just been a part of who we are.
Yeah. We recently wrapped up a series on redistricting on Untangled ahead of the vote this November. But one of the things I learned that was really fascinating is we get the word gerrymandering from a political cartoon. It went back to Massachusetts in the early 1800s. And the first time we really saw a drawing of lines for partisan gain, a cartoonist turned, I believe his name was Elkanah Tisdale, turned one of the districts into this monster, and it became like a portmanteau between the word salamander and Elbridge Gerry, who was the governor. But essentially, it was a cartoonist who made this monster map and, created this word, and now we just call it gerrymandering.
Yeah. It is kind of amazing how much of our iconography, comes from it. I mean, obviously, you've got the popularization of the donkey for the Democrats, the elephant for the Republicans. Going back to Thomas Nast, he was instrumental in coming up with the iconography of what we now consider to be Santa Claus.
Yeah, I think even the fat cat, like the like for barons of industry, like there's so many things that are just part of our lexicon that come from political cartooning. So let's talk about some of your cartoons. I went through your archive and it was a fun trip down memory lane because some of them I remembered. A number of your cartoons have featured Governor Mike DeWine, which makes sense. He is the governor of the state of Ohio. You took a shot at him for not debating Nan Whaley during the governor's race. You had another one of DeWine dressed as Willy Wonka, handing out million-dollar golden tickets for those who got their COVID vaccines. You had one of a teeny tiny Mike DeWine peeking out of the suit pocket of a gun lobbyist saying, "Oh, look, he doesn't even need a permit." And so there you have a wide range. How do you decide, you know, I want to make DeWine dressed as Willy Wonka for these golden tickets for COVID vaccines, or I want to make him teeny tiny in the pocket of the gun lobbyist. Like, how do you come up with those ideas?
I there's no real formula to it. Some days it's finding a phrase that just really captures an idea. Some days it's an image. Some days it's looking through books or trying to think about what just really what's going to resonate with people, because our media landscape is can be so fractured. I don't know if there are that many references that that everyone gets these days. So I'm trying to find something that will resonate and be accessible to as many people as possible. So when when you think about the one with Willy Wonka, he was I believe that DeWine was handing he was handing out scholarships with COVID vaccinations. I
And
could
there
be
was
wrong
a
about that.
lottery to win a bunch of money.
Yeah, yes, yeah. And and it just it reminded me of Willy Wonka, getting the golden ticket. And it just kind of fit. And sometimes I don't even know why something fits, but it just does. And for every cartoon that you see, there are maybe five sketches that don't quite work or are just completely out in left field. I'm spending most of my time just coming up with the ideas.
Yeah, that makes sense. One of the things I love about political cartoons is they can communicate complicated ideas and political issues in this digestible format, right? It makes these issues accessible to a wider audience. One of my favorites, and it's kind of ironic, is you have a math board filled with formulas, and it's supposed to be laying out all the different causes and reasons for inflation. And then there's this guy standing, staring at the math board, and the guy who's like, you know, working it all out. And he just says, yeah, but who do I blame? And I guess the irony there is that you're trying to you know, you're trying to communicate something complicated, but in a simple, straightforward way.
That's a challenge that I face every day, because we do tend to think of the news cycle as this minute by minute, almost second by second, just headline, 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 just being tossed at the audience, when really every story builds on another story. You know this, as as a journalist, every story builds on a previous story, so it can be very hard to try to encapsulate something like inflation in a single cartoon, where inflation wasn't just caused by a president. Doesn't matter who's in the White House. It's caused by the Fed and choices that that are made there. It's caused by world events, such as
Supply chain
COVID or
issues.
war. There's so much that goes into any kind of political topic. And, no matter if you're a cartoon or if you're, a reporter, you're trying to distill it so that the audience can understand. But without all the context behind it, it can fall flat. Just last week, I was working on a cartoon about the issue one redistricting issue, and I was trying to really encapsulate everything that was going into some of what's being called misinformation in terms of the ballot language. And yeah, that's a hard thing to do
Oh, yeah.
because, I really, it's not just that, one side is saying this and the other side is saying that. It's,
You almost need a flow chart.
years. Yeah, really, you do. Because, you're looking back at constitutional, or not constitutional, but, elections from years past. You're looking at election cycles from years past and, when elections happened and what gerrymandering is and, the redistricting commission, all these things that you're trying to, that I'm trying to sum up in, essentially a one panel cartoon. And it's almost impossible. And then think about all the other issues that we have. It's a very high, it's a very steep mountain to climb,
I
not just
don't
for
envy you
cartoonists,
for
but I think
that.
for, yeah, but for journalists too.
Yeah.
What you do, you're trying to sum up issues every day on your radio program, but you know that there are so many other factors that lead into those issues.
Yeah. They usually say that, in reporting, 80% of what you learn doesn't end up in your article or doesn't end up in your radio story or your TV package. So much
Yeah.
of it is just so that you understand the issue, because I have to think you've got to do a lot of research to understand an issue like redistricting, especially if you're going to try and draw it.
I'm constantly reading the news. I'm constantly reading many different news sources, to the point where sometimes I feel like I don't even I'm not even able to like really get into the meat of an issue because I'm trying to consume so much information all at once.
You did have a really good redistricting one a couple years ago. It was an elephant dressed as a basketball player trying to
Oh.
dunk in a basket, but there's this
Yes.
hand in a robe, which is supposed to be a justice from the Ohio Supreme Court, slapping the ball away. So the basketball analogy was like, I think it worked in that situation to communicate what you were trying to say.
Yeah. And that's something that a lot of editorial cartoonists try to do, which is we try to take an issue, but we try to find a good metaphor that acts as a shorthand for the audience and for the cartoonist,
Yeah.
so that they can. It's hard to say that, okay, the Ohio Supreme Court under former Justice O'Connor was slapping down all these redistricting proposals, and there were all these different meetings about from the Ohio Redistricting Commission that kept getting put up and being knocked down because they were unconstitutional. But it's a lot easier when it's March and March Madness is happening, and I can draw it as a basketball game. You just immediately get that connection.
Yeah,
And it puts it into context.
it absolutely did. Yeah, even the one that we talked about earlier of Governor Mike DeWine peeking out of the suit pocket of a gun lobbyist. I mean, that is a colloquial phrase, right? That person's in the pocket of this lobby or that lobby. So you just literally put him in the pocket.
Yeah.
You also penned one.
And,
Oh, go ahead.
oh, no, please. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was just going to say, you also penned a cartoon of Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost with a black leather shoe in his mouth after he had cast doubt on whether the 10-year-old rape victim was real. That's just another one that comes to mind because it's literally foot and mouth.
Yeah, we're constantly looking for those images and those colloquialisms that pretty much everyone knows. Again, it's all about finding context. It's about finding a delivery system for these topics and for these opinions to be able to be distilled into a single image that people can understand.
And though a lot of what you do is politics, I should mention you also do sports cartooning, which is also hilarious and fun, particularly if you follow the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
So you do more than just politics, which makes sense. How?
Yes.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I spent a good 10 years as a local editorial cartoonist, and yeah, politics is fun, but it can be very grating. As a local cartoonist, you're trying to be a mirror on your community. And obviously in a lot of communities, especially Cincinnati, sports is a big one. So yeah, That tends to pop up quite a bit.
Yeah, you recently had a football-themed one this fall featuring Donald Trump and a football ref. So, where he's essentially saying the refs cheated and said that he didn't score the touchdown. So, again, that's that, we're in football season. It made sense to do it now. Final question for you, though, is where do people find your work? Because obviously, I'm just doing a mediocre job describing it, but if people want to find these cartoons we've been talking about, where do they find you?
Well, right now I'm publishing every Tuesday through a Substack hosted by David Pepper, the former Ohio Democratic chairman. His Substack is called Pepperspectives, and you can also find my work just on social media at on X, on Instagram, and at my website, kevinnecessary.com.
And you also are, yeah, Kevin Necessary on Instagram. You can go down a real rabbit hole and like review the last 4 years in Ohio politics, essentially, in political cartoons. I'm not sure what, if somebody only looked at political cartoons, what their takeaway would be of Ohio politics.
Oh Lord. Who knows? I hope they'd hope they br would bring some Dramamine.
That was Kevin Necessary, a political cartoonist based in Cincinnati. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're hearing from a nationally renowned street artist whose Get Out the Vote posters just went up all across Columbus. That's when Untangled continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day,
we are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about the intersection of art and politics this hour, and downtown Columbus is sporting some new political posters. They're aimed at getting you to vote, no matter who you choose as a candidate. Street artist Shepard Fairey, the guy behind the Obey brand and Obama's iconic red and blue posters, has erected wheat paste posters at a dozen locations downtown, and he painted a permanent Get Out the Vote mural in Cincinnati. WOSU reporter Ali Vugrinzik traveled to the Queen City for the unveiling, and she joins us now. Welcome back to All Sides, Ali.
Thanks for having me, Anna.
Let's start with the Get Out the Vote campaign. It's a partnership with Arts Vote Ohio and the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Why do they want to get people registered and voting?
Well, I think we can all agree that voting is a good thing. This particular movement is really focused on using like peer-to-peer marketing, artists creating art and talking to other artists to get the creative community to get out there and vote. The numbers that they're talking about is that, Ohio's creative arts sector is like 157,000 people strong and represents like 3% of the state's GDP. So this is like a huge group of people that could make a difference in the election. But it is a nonpartisan movement. So the difference is, whomever you decide to vote for and whatever you decide to vote for, which goes beyond candidates. They're also talking about voting for arts funding and the types of issues that will impact arts and culture going forward.
Yeah, Arts Vote Ohio emphasizes that this isn't a partisan effort and all of the artwork being created just tells people to vote. None of the signs push for one candidate or another, but Shepard Fairey isn't shy about sharing his own personal politics.
The thing that catalyzed me to focus on more specific issues in my work was the buildup to the Iraq War. I felt like there were fishy justifications for that, and a lot of Bush's ideas post 9/11 about people forfeiting privacy and certain freedoms for the sake of safety was concerning to me. So I started to do some research about those policy positions and how I could comment on them in a way that was meaningful. And that just started a chain reaction that meant that issues I care about, war and peace, the environment, equality, freedom of speech, that all of those things were things that I would do research on and comment with a level of knowledge and authority that I felt I could stand behind.
And Shepard Fairey also painted the iconic red and blue poster of President Barack Obama. How does the council balance the, say, political opinions of the artists with the nonpartisan message of their work?
So I did go down to Cincinnati and I attended an artist talk with Shepard, which was really cool. But throughout this, you know, hour and a half long event, they kept reiterating, this is nonpartisan. We want to keep it nonpartisan. But you could sort of tell at moments that they were struggling to, you know, not make political comments. And you mentioned the Obama poster, which is so iconic. Shepard has also done one of Kamala, which, you know, says something about this election.
About where he stands politically. But, you know, the mural in Cincinnati, which you can see images of on our website, WOSU.org, or on the WOSU All Sides Instagram. So WOSU All Sides on Instagram. The mural is in reds, blues, whites. It has broken chains, a lotus flower, a dove. Allie, what did Shepard share with you about those symbols and why he picked them?
Well, first of all, he said he wanted to pick symbols that were, like, fairly universally understood. And, you know, with a dove, you think about peace. A lotus flower is also peace, justice, the idea of something blooming, the idea of the chains breaking. He was really aiming to inspire people with well-understood symbols. And, you know, obviously red, white, and blue, those are just America colors. They're not they're not partisan, you know, in a certain way. So that was what he was really aiming for with that symbolism. And he talks a lot about symbolism when you get him talking.
Yeah, here's another cut from your interview with Shepard Fairey.
I'm always hoping that symbols I use are close to universally understood and have a similar interpretation, if not the same interpretation. Everything is subjective, so a flower might mean a slightly different thing to me than it does to someone else. But I think for most people, it means something positive, blooming. It symbolizes health, springtime, and rebirth and opportunity. You know, a lotus very specifically has got an association in many cultures with a harmony and a wholeness or a oneness and resilience. So, even if something isn't interpreted exactly the way I am meaning it for it to be interpreted or hoping that it's interpreted, I think that sometimes there's just a feeling that draws someone in that makes them want to get to the bottom of it and ask questions. And that's a really good thing to catalyze that art can achieve. So, it's impossible to get everyone to transform through what I make, but if I'm playing a small part in some people doing it, it can be a chain reaction because then those people talk to other people. It's a ripple effect.
That was Shepard Fairey, the street artist who painted that mural in Cincinnati, and he's got a dozen posters going up in 12 locations around Columbus. Ellie, I won't ask you to name all the addresses live on air, but can you tell us where one or two are?
Yeah, absolutely. So these are already up. And I actually haven't seen any of them myself, but I was talking to one of our other reporters, George Shilcock, and I showed him a photo on my phone. And he said, oh, I know where that is. So I know he went out and found a couple for me in the Short North. There's one on the Paradise Garage. And also in the Short North, there's one by DP Doe. And these are really cool. They're also in those, red, white, and blue colors. And some of the images include a flower with a voter sticker in the middle and then a petal being pulled off, sort of like, you know, taking your voter sticker. And the one I really like is a ballot box that's been drawn as a speaker.
Oh, that one's my favorite.
Yeah, and it's got these like electric bolts coming out of it like the ballot box is your voice. And there's one of those by the State House on East State Street.
And if you want a complete list of the 12 different locations, you can go online to WOSU.org, and we'll have a link where we post our All Sides digital feed. Did Shepard say anything to you about why he chose those different images for these wheat paste posters?
Well, yeah, he definitely, as you heard in that last cut, he was talking about the flowers and he likes the idea of blooming and hope. And when it came to the ballot box, he was also trying to get out that idea of amplifying your voice. And one of the things he talked about in general with trying to create these images, he said he was like misquoting Charles Bukowski, but the idea of if it's worth saying, it's worth saying with style, which I just love. So I think it was also trying to make really sharp, poignant images that are going to catch people's eye. And like I said, clearly George saw it right away. So.
Yeah, they all have that red, whites, and blues. But it's funny because it looks consistent. Like, if you're aware of what Shepard Fairey's work looks like, you recognize it as his almost immediately.
Oh, absolutely. You know, as soon
as you've seen the Obama poster, like, you see these, you're like, you see correlation between them.
That's what I was telling my friends. I was like, I met the guy who made the Obama poster.
Yeah, I grew up in New York, lived in New York City for a couple of years. So for me, he's the Obey guy because that's like really where that started. And I remember seeing a lot of it. But you asked Shepard this great question during your interview about the intersection of art and politics. And here's what he said.
I think art can have kind of a spectrum of outspokenness to conveying, say, just a feeling that draws out the best part of our humanity. Some decorative things, I think, that are beautifully designed create a serenity. It's a calm space within chaos, and that can open someone's heart a little bit. And then something that's very topical and specific, you know, that can move into visual activism in a more direct, overt way. I weave all of it into my art. There's some things that I'm addressing that are challenging, and the artwork is going to be provocative. And there are other things that have something more decorative and evocative blended with something provocative. So it's a range, but I think that art should not be exclusively confrontational or exclusively escapist. That's the beauty of it. It can have a dichotomy.
You know what I find fascinating about Shepard Fairey's take on that is we often hear that stay in your lane phrase when it comes to artists and athletes and performers. Like, I remember the backlash against the Dixie Chicks during the Iraq War when they criticized former President George W. Bush. But it is one of those interesting things when artists, performers, sports figures step out into politics.
Yeah, one of the things that Shepard talked about during his talk in Cincinnati was the idea that art can be very elitist or can seem very elitist. But he started out as a street artist. He's still primarily a street artist. And one of the things he said is that he thought for a while that, you know, he wasn't good enough to say certain things with his art. And then he realized that the people who were saying things were saying, like, dumb things. And he had just as valid, if not a more valid opinion than they did. So part of what he was advocating for with, using art to inspire civic discourse or democracy or just something as simple as getting out the vote is kind of the idea that these are ideas and concepts everybody should participate in. And as artists, you have as much of a right to be in this and participating in it as everybody else, maybe more because you have the ability to convey a message in a specific way that not everybody does.
Yeah, and I think in art specifically, there's been this long-standing intersection, especially visual art, with politics. You know, earlier in the hour, we had on a political cartoonist. So I think that's, in some ways, that kind of art has always had a political bent.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You also got to interview first-time voters during this reporting trip. What was their reaction to the murals, voting for the first time?
Yeah, so I met a first-time voter who had come from Loveland, specifically to hear Shepherd talk. And she was just very excited, and she wanted to sort of, like, remind younger people who might be scared to vote or might already feel like their vote doesn't count, having not even voted once yet, that it's still worth it and you still have a voice.
I think that's great. And it's also worth reminding folks that today is the very last day you can register to vote in Ohio's election. So make sure your friends are registered, your family. If you've moved, you should check and update your registration because your ballot will change, your polling place will change. So at midnight tonight, they close it off and then early voting starts tomorrow.
That's right. And correct me if I'm wrong, I believe you can do it online and you can do it with a photo ID, your address, your name, and the last four digits of your social security number.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward, especially updating your registration, which, it, you know, a lot of times when people are younger or earlier in their career, they move around a lot. And you want to make sure you got the right polling place because that's important, especially when it comes to local voter issues.
Absolutely. And the voting laws have changed a couple times recently, so you've got to pay attention.
Yeah, you got to bring a state ID. It can be a driver's license or a state ID, but you do need some sort of photographic identification. You can do a military national ID, but not like a state National Guard ID, which is weird. So there's a whole list on the Secretary of State's website telling you what's valid, what's not. So just make sure you've got what you need before you go vote. In just a couple of minutes, we're actually going to hear from one of the artists involved in this project. But there are also a bunch of local artists from across Ohio participating in this, right? There's a bunch of yard signs that just essentially say, get registered, go vote. And you can pick them up at locations all across Columbus. We're going to be talking about where, and we're going to be talking in depth with one of the artists. But Ali, these are some pretty cool voting yard signs.
They are pretty cool. There are a dozen of them, and they sort of have them broken up as to where you can pick them up. One of my favorites, which I think is also one of your favorites, has a cat on it.
Yeah. We're actually going to be interviewing the artist that did the cat one just in a couple minutes.
There's also one with a bird that's sort of tweeting out a message about voting. And then another thing they did is they asked all artists, not just these 12 artists who did the yard signs, to submit art that is about voting. So you can find on their website a lot of digital art and downloads from people all over the state.
Yeah. And don't forget to register to vote. That was WOSU reporter Ali Vugrinzik. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Anna.
Coming up, we're going to tell you how to get one of those voting yard signs designed by a local artist. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Political art challenges viewers to think critically about their beliefs. It can inspire action, mobilize communities, and in the case of a recent campaign by Arts Vote Ohio, maybe it can even motivate people to vote this November. Stephanie Rond is an internationally recognized painter and street artist. Her work reimagines traditional expectations of space, place, gender, and power. Welcome to All Sides, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me.
So you're one of 13 Ohio artists who have created a yard sign for Arts Vote Ohio this election. How did you get involved with the project?
I got involved through the Greater Columbus Arts Council. So they came to me and said, hey, we're partnering with Creative Ohio for some political yard signs. Would you be interested?
And these yard signs do not advocate for a specific candidate. They advocate that you vote. So Stephanie's sign features a black cat on one side with the words, vote. Your voice is your power. How did you land on this design?
Well, honestly, I had designed this 4 years ago, and so it was a great reuse of a campaign that people may have already seen in my work. I am a childless cat lady, though, so I wanted to pay homage to my cat, Dory.
So the cat on the sign is Dory.
Correct. The cat on the sign is she's passed, but she was my cat. And funny enough, I feel like Columbus really loves cats. So I felt like it was really fitting for this campaign.
So it does sound like you designed it before Senator J.D. Vance's comment about childless cat ladies went viral.
I sure did. As a cat person, I have been hiding cats in my artwork since 2016.
They're so, your Easter eggs.
Yes, I was ahead of the curve on this one.
So I do have to ask, does the sign have new meaning after Vance's comments about women without children and the comments about Haitian migrants in Springfield?
Absolutely, it does on both parts. I think that we are here to love. We are here to accept each other and see all our beauties and differences and celebrate us rather than divide us.
And there are a dozen other options if Dory the Cat does not appeal to you. There is one with people holding up what appear to be streamers that create an American flag. There's one that's very simple and it just says voting is so punk rock. There's really one for every kind of voter.
Yes, absolutely. And I appreciate that it's creatives of all types. So there's poets and writers and visual artists. So it really is truly celebrating creative Ohio.
Yeah, and you can go online and see them, and you can to artsvoteoh.org. So it's artsvoteoh.org, and you can see all of the yarn signs, and you can also find a list of places where you can pick them up, because there's a couple of different locations here. There's locations in Cincinnati, in Dayton, in Cleveland. They are free. There's no charge, but quantities are limited, so when they are gone, they are gone.
Yes, that's true.
There's also downloadable signs made by different artists. There's this really clever one that I liked a lot. I may have to download. It's from Twist Creative in Cleveland. It reads, "Vote like everyone is watching."
Oh, that's beautiful.
I did like that. So the idea behind this project was to motivate those in the arts community to vote, to essentially recognize the influence you all have here in Ohio.
Yes, and I didn't realize there were so many of us.
I know, neither did I. Yeah, according to Creative Ohio, artists and creatives number more than 157,000 people here in Ohio, and the economic output of the creative sector represents more than 3% of the state's GDP. That, I had no idea.
Yeah, that's quite a significant voice and power. If we all get out to the polls and vote, we could really make some change.
What has been the reaction, say, from your friends in the creative community to the campaign, to the election, to the state of politics generally?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
Well, we can start with the yard signs.
Yes, let's start with the yard signs. Overwhelming support for the yard signs. Where can I get it? I actually even have a couple on my front porch. So if you know where I live, go get one. But I think people are enjoying the nonpartisan message in that, vote. It's that simple.
Yeah, I think that's the overall message is, I always say decisions are made by the people who show up.
That's so true.
And if you want to have a say in the direction that the country, the city, the community, the state, you're going to have to actually vote. And this is probably a good time to remind people that today is the very last day that you can register to vote or the very last day that you can update your voter registration. Sometimes that's more important. If you've moved in the last couple of years, moved since the last time you voted, you're going to need to register, get a new precinct, maybe even get a new ballot because you might have different people, different issues.
Yes, please take care of that today, people.
Midnight is the deadline, and you can do it all online.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't even actually have to put on pants and go down to the Board of Elections. It's very easy. So what has been are other creatives in your community surprised to hear that you're 157,000 strong, that you're such a big part of the GDP? Like, are they also surprised by the size and scope?
Yes, I think so. I think for a lot of us, we work alone or in small collectives, and it is surprising to realize how large of a collective and we are, and how much influence we can have if we vote. I know sometimes it feels like I'm one person and I can't make a difference, but if I start listing all of my colleagues, I see the greater picture.
So this is being put together by Creative Ohio, and I want to play a cut from Sarah Sisser from the organization. And she had this really interesting comment, not only about how this project is nonpartisan, obviously you have your own political beliefs, but how art itself can also bridge those divides.
It's evident that the arts are something that really bridge a lot of divides in this state. And we do have a lot of divides in this state. We have a pretty significant urban-rural divide. But across the board, the arts have been well supported. So getting behind a campaign that is all about the arts and engaging in democracy, I think, can be supported and broadly accepted.
I want to ask you about that, because obviously, you know, we talked earlier with Shepherd Fairey, and obviously you and other artists, like, people have their own political opinions. You probably know who you're voting for. I'm not going to ask you to tell us, like, that's totally, you know, ballots are private unless people don't want them to be. But I wonder, what are the difficulties in crafting nonpartisan works in an incredibly partisan time? Does that make sense?
Yes. I try to make work that is about including everyone. You know, you can't really have a conversation if you all agree all the time. So it's important to make the work accessible so that we can have the conversations. It's the saying, you catch more bees with honey or flies with honey
than you do with vinegar. How do you think the creative arts get impacted by things like presidential elections? I mean, we always say all politics is local, but I mean, there, I guess there's the National Endowment for the Arts. Mm-hmm. There are grants. There's different like kinds of funding, right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously it is affected by who's in office, but, you know, everybody believes in the arts. Everybody knows that the arts are important. So, yes, we do see rise and fall with funding, but it actually doesn't matter Democrat or Republican. It's kind of the, what are we funding right now?
No, that makes sense. I want to talk a little bit about some of your other work. Was this your first foray, if I could say that word, into political art? Is it something you've been branching out over time? Because I've seen some of your other work, and it's not, some of it isn't overtly political, but some of it is.
Yeah, no, I've been a political activist since I was 15. So I've been marching since I was 15 years old. My work has always been about social political activism, representation, gender, power, you know, who owns space, which is why I'm a street artist.
Yeah, you also have a current exhibit outside and inside the McConnell Arts Center. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Spacewalkers is a body of work that I've been working on for the past 4 years. So it's all three levels of the McConnell, and it deals specifically with monuments and who's represented in those monuments and how they make us feel.
Can you describe a little bit like what I would see if I went to go and take a look at this?
Yes. So you will see a bunch of beautiful women as statues in the exhibit, as well as an homage to a lot of my personal heroes.
Oh, we'll have to. How long is it going to be up?
It'll be up till November 14th. And there's a closing reception with a spoken word element with Cynthia Amoa.
Oh, that sounds cool. Is that on November 14th?
Yes, on November 14th. So
how did you know you wanted to be a street artist versus, say, a paint on canvas kind of artist?
I got into street art about 20 years ago, and the reason I did it was because there weren't any ladies in the game that I could see. It was very important to me that there were artworks out in public spaces that represented women and girls as active citizens rather than as objects.
That also kind of dovetails with your S-Dot gallery, which are dollhouse exhibits.
Yeah, yes. So S-Dot gallery is a dollhouse. She has been around for 13 years, and she is currently in the exhibit at the McConnell Arts Center as well.
And there's also a short documentary about it.
Yes, Tiny Out Loud, which is coming up on its 10-year anniversary.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a film that Andrew Ina and Dan Gerdeman did to so that we could talk about how street art and the Dollhouse Gallery are all about accessibility.
What does that mean to you, to make art accessible? Like, how do you define that?
It means that you don't have to go to, you know, big white boxes to see art, but more importantly, that you see yourself being represented in the art as well as the artist.
I get what you mean. The whole if you can see it, you can believe it idea.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of the neat things I think about this project with Arts Vote Ohio is that the 13 different artists are from all different backgrounds, all different parts of the state, the different voting posters are all, they're so different.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of the campaign is it shows so many voices all wanting the same thing, but those voices are going to resonate with different people.
I will say that not every location has every sign as somebody who, you know, for reporting purposes, went on a hunt for different signs. You may want to call ahead to some of the locations and ask them if you're looking for a very specific sign.
Yes.
I think they have like two, maybe three different versions at each location.
Yeah, I think it's three.
Or you can just go collect them all.
Yeah. Why not? Go on a treasure hunt.
Put them all in your front port on your front sign. You've also had street art murals in Vienna and Nepal.
Yes.
How did you end up doing art overseas?
The beautiful thing about street art in particular, so paper, is you can make friends and colleagues in other places and ship work, and they will put it up for you.
Oh, was it like a WePaste poster or what?
Yeah, so I'm part of a collective called Micro Galleries, where we focus on climate crisis, and we are all over the world. So we our messages are specific to those.
Yeah, that's a, you know, I think there's such a long history of art and politics. Where do you see yourself, I guess, in the arc of history or... I mean, maybe that's a really big question. Like, how do you want to be remembered in terms of art, your political art?
I want to, that's a great question. I want to be remembered as somebody who wants justice for all of us, who wants equality for all of us.
Yeah, you even have art on the sides of dumpsters in Columbus. I guess it's the ultimate in accessibility.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my goodness. Do you have artists that you're inspired by?
Oh, absolutely. Every day. I could name big names, but I would rather focus on the artists in my community that really inspire me. Queen Brooks. Fiores West, who has passed away, Dan Gerdeman, Amy Librand. There's so many of my colleagues, Kathy Bell Smith, that inspire me to keep going every day.
Where do we find your work? If somebody, you know, I've said this all hour, I'm doing a mediocre job explaining the artwork that people do. Where do we go online to find your stuff?
So online, I'm StephanieRond.com, R-O-N-D. I'm on Instagram and Facebook. I'm kind of an open book, so I think
that's true of a lot of artists these days.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to share your work if you're not open.
Yeah. Do you do custom commissions? Do you do prints?
I don't do prints, but yes, I do custom commissions.
Yeah, I guess it would be hard with some of the like large scale outdoor pieces.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could photograph it.
Yeah, but the details just don't come out. And plus, I love the idea that something exists and then disappears. I think that's
the ephemeral
beautiful.
Quality of it.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful statement.
Yeah. Sometimes it feels a little sad. It's like bittersweet, right?
Yeah. The most response I've ever gotten when taking down my work is, hey, we like that. You can't do that. And I'm like, well, I'm the artist, so.
So it's kind of my thing.
I can actually make another one for you. It's okay.
That was Stephanie Rond, an internationally recognized painter and street artist. You can find her voting poster at several locations across Columbus. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.